Jesus love is very wonderful. Jesus love is very wonderful. Jesus love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high I can't get over it. So low I can't get under it. So wide can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, can't get over it. So low, can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it.
Hello and welcome to the Holy Half Hour here on 3TFM with me, the Reverend Alec Noble, Minister of Silcoats North Parish Church. And welcome to a very special guest in the studio today. Special because she is special in herself as an exceptional person, but special because she's come further than any other interviewee on 3TFM, all the way from Malawi in Africa, and special because she's now appearing on the Holy Half Hour for the third time. That's a record number of times for any guest. So welcome to you, Helen Scott,
Thank you. Local girl
from Dalry, but Church of Scotland missionary or mission partner out in Malawi, and teaching in a girls' school in Equindeni. So welcome, Helen, and how long have you been working in Africa now then?
I've been working in Africa for 30 years, 15 in Zambia and 15 in Malawi.
Right. But I understand that you're home now, I was going to say to retire, but you were correcting me there off here.
Yeah, I'm relocating. I feel that God is telling me to come back to Scotland and to do something for him here.
Right. Have you something definite in mind, or are you just exploring that at the moment?
Not yet. At the moment, I'm exploring.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, since this is our third programme, and you've already told us a bit about your work out in Malawi, I thought we could do something different. Like, let's tap your brains and your vast wealth of experience over 30 years in Africa to get your views on a few important subjects. And there's none more important than the subject of poverty and justice. I've always been fascinated by the fact that you commute from the world's seventh richest country to the world's seventh poorest country. And that must be difficult to get your head around both ways. You must find that fascinating and mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is. I think I've got two compartments in my head and I just click from one to the other. But it is a huge difference. And when I come here and I look around and I see the streets and the electricity that works 24 hours and water that runs 24 hours and beautiful, everything working properly, and you go to Malawi and it's hot and dusty and dry and sometimes there's no electricity or no water, or there's no electricity in the villages at all because it can't get there, or people have to go and get their water from the river and carry it back on their head for 3 miles before they can use it. All these things. The difference is just so huge that it's difficult really to compare them. They're sort of on different planets.
Yes and no, because we have some bad days in North Ayrshire too, you see, and what normally works isn't working today. And, you know, when people complain about the local services and things, do the people complain out in Malawi, and is it much the same all over?
They don't complain as much. They do complain, but they don't complain as much. And when I see the things like the National Health Service here, it's just out of this world. What people are complaining about, if they were in Malawi, we don't even have anything like it. And so it's just, as it's in its problem state here, it's tremendous if that was in Malawi. So they're just completely different.
It would do us all good to go out to Malawi for a while and come back and see things.
I think you appreciate things more when you come back after being out. I certainly do appreciate things a lot more here than if I'd never gone, because if I'd never gone, I would just have assumed that that's how it should be. But having been in Africa, you see that most people don't even have the basics, and so you appreciate what you do have much, much more. So yeah, I think it would do people lots of good to be able to go and see, visit and experience what life is like there for a while. they'd appreciate better.
So how poor is poor in Malawi?
That's difficult, you know, because according to the statistics, we're the seventh poorest country. But people are cheerful and happy. But how poor is poor? Well, in the village, which is the remote areas, the country areas, there's no electricity. People cook on firewood. They get their water from a well. They don't have money all the time. They often do things by sort of growing it themselves, or they barter for things and they exchange things. It's only big things like hospital bills or school fees that need money.
Is there any sense of national health? Is everything paid for?
Everything has to be paid for. No, hang on, that's not quite correct. The government hospitals are free to a certain extent, but the other hospitals, you've got to pay for, not a huge amount, a small charge for if you're admitted, or for the use of the pharmacy for drugs and things. So people would prefer to go to a government hospital than another hospital, but then they might not get a good doctor at the government hospital, so they might not actually get the correct treatment. So there's problems on both sides.
How do you feel about Scotland having food banks?
That is quite an eye-opener for me, actually. When I came back last time and I saw so many food banks, and I thought, yeah, there's a need here too. A different level of need, but there is a need. And I think it's good. I was able to say to friends in Malawi, well, you know, Scotland, they have food banks too. And I explained to them, and they found that an eye-opener.
Is a food bank in Scotland like a food bank in Malawi, or is there a difference?
We don't have food banks in Malawi because there's no help. You've just got to grow it yourself or do without.
Uh-huh.
So if they don't have food, they would just skip a meal or
but
two meals. But
Scottish people growing it themselves then? Is that the answer?
Well, no, we don't have fields, do we? Everybody in Malawi has land and has a field so that they can grow food. And they're living just near their
land. Is that their own piece of land or a communal piece of land?
It's their own piece of land. They're given it by the village headman, but it's for them, for their family.
Right.
So it's their own land. And everyone has access to a field, apart from maybe in the cities. But even in the cities, they've got a village home somewhere and they've got access to land so they can grow their own.
Yeah. Thinking of spiritual poverty as opposed to just material poverty, how does Scotland and Malawi compare there?
Well, there it's reversed. Scotland has got the spiritual poverty and Malawi's got the riches.
Can you explain that?
In Malawi, the church is much, much more alive, much, much more active. The congregation in Ekwendeni, where I was working, we had about 600 people in the congregation. There were two services in the morning, so there was about 300. Lots and lots and lots of young people, as well as older people. So the whole spectrum is there. And the church is the centre of society, so people look to the church for everything, really. That reminds me, actually, the church does sort of run a food bank in that at harvest season, which is now, people bring maize to the church and the church collects it all and then it gives it out to widows and orphans. But the church is very practically involved in practical things like assisting those in poverty, assisting in healthcare and education. So the church is very important to society. Whereas here, the church has been sidelined. The government has taken over everything, the role, and is and does everything for everybody, and the church isn't mm-hmm. involved. That's maybe one thing about food banks. The church is getting involved again.
Is there a connection between material poverty and spiritual poverty?
Oh, that's a hard one.
Is it, you know, if you're in a poor country, you're spiritually going to have packed churches, and if you're in a rich country, you're spiritually going to have empty churches?
I think that if you're materially poor, then you've got less resources to fall back on. And so you can't trust your resources and you trust God more. Whereas when you've got everything, then you have less need to trust God because you've got all your resources and what's in the bank and everything to fall back on. And so there's less need for trust. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a link.
Now, I've asked you to bring some music. And could you introduce your first track to us?
Yeah, our first track is called Charo Chapasi. And it's about our use of the earth. It's sung by children. And these are children are all from the local blind school. And they're not all completely blind. Some of them have got very low vision. And they lead the ones who are completely blind. But they've all got very, very poor eyesight. Some of them are albinos. Some of them are not albinos, but they've been blind since birth. Some of them got blind through river blindness. Some of them were blinded through accidents as children when they poked a stick in their eye or something. And so these are children from the blind school. Children from the age of about 8 up to the age of about 17. And they sing, although they can't see or have very low vision, their faces are radiant and they're always very cheerful and very joyful. And to me, when I listen to them and when I hear them singing, it's a real tonic.
So they're spiritually rich even in their material poverty.
Yep.
Let's hear the Equindenny School for the Visually Impaired Choir.
Paga por
You're listening to me interviewing Helen Scott, our partner in mission, and we're just discussing some major issues throughout the world in terms of Malawi and back in Scotland. So let's turn the spotlight on the subject of democracy. Is Malawi a democracy?
Yes, it is, but it's a young democracy. We've only had a democracy for about 12 years.
And it's a flourishing democracy. When there's an election, do people turn out in big numbers to vote?
They do, not quite as big as they turned out for the Scottish referendum, but they do turn out in big numbers because voting is still a novelty. And often people want change, so yeah, they do turn out in big numbers.
So they're about fresh
60,
to all this
70%.
Enthused by it.
Yeah.
How much percent?
About between 60 and 70%, I think.
Very good.
Turnout.
Yeah. I don't know if there's an answer to this, but have the Malawians got a view about the Scottish referendum?
The whole world had a view about the Scottish referendum.
They were listening in, were they?
They were listening very carefully because the north of Malawi was thinking about seceding, and they were watching what happened in Scotland to see which way they would go. Just like Catalonia and all these small nations or small groups were watching. People were watching very closely what was happening in Scotland.
So what was their reaction to the final result?
I don't know if they would have, because I wasn't there, I was here, but I think they would just say, oh, well, that's what they've done. But they were all getting into it. It was a big discussion point, and they were all discussing whether it would go this way or that way, but they were just watching.
Yeah. If we had voted yes, do you think we'd have started a revolution around the world in all sorts of places?
You could have done yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it could have been quite a lot of bloodshed as well.
Is the politics there a bit more like that?
Not really, but there are guns around, and I don't know what would have happened, but there could have been more bloodshed. I think one of the good things about the Scottish referendum is that people saw how democracy works. They saw a huge turnout of people going to the ballot boxes. They saw people accepting the results, and they've not seen any war since then. We've accepted peacefully, and that's a tremendous witness to the world on how real democracy should work. So I think Scotland's done well.
Yes, good. Do you think that we value our democracy enough? We had a good turnout for the referendum, but the usual turnout for a general election
is low.
Is much lower, you see.
Yeah, I think we're used to it, but if we didn't have it, if we didn't have democracy, then we'd look back and say, oh, why couldn't we go back to that? It's like all these things, when we get used to things, we stop valuing them.
Yeah. What does it take to inject a bit of new enthusiasm into our system then?
I don't know. I'm not a politician. Maybe you've just got to keep... I don't know.
I'll excuse you that, because I don't think anybody else knows either. Let's have your second piece of music.
This is Soweto Gospel Choir from South Africa, and they're singing a song entitled Asim Bonanga Biko.
I was reading the notes in this on the CD, and it says that it was recorded in 2004 to celebrate the 10th anniversary of democracy in South Africa.
Okay.
And this particular track supported the people struggling for democracy through the dark days of apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hear the Soweto Gospel Choir.
Asim monanga
asi monangu mandela tu la pe konna la pe feli konna
asi monanga
asi monangu mandela tu la pe
But you can't blow out their fire. Once their flames begin to catch, the wind will blow it high. Oh,
Helen, I'd like to tap your brains on the subject of HIV and AIDS, because we know that it's quite prevalent in Africa. Is it quite prevalent in Malawi?
It is, yes. It's the scourge of the country, really. There's about 43% infection rate at the moment.
43% of the country?
Yeah, 43% of the population.
It's nearly half of the people.
Mm-hmm. There's a huge number of deaths per year. There's a lot of new infections still per year. Because of the success of antiretrovirals. Antiretrovirals are available to about 56% of those who need them. And antiretrovirals really allow people to... They stop the course of the disease, and so they allow people to live much longer. So because of antiretrovirals, the number of deaths from AIDS is going down.
But only half the people infected have access to these.
Those in villages won't have access, because unless they're near a hospital, they can't always get to them. So that's a problem. But then you find that the biggest infection rate tends to be in the towns and the cities. And so they have access to the antiretrovirals. But we've only got one type of antiretroviral. Here in Britain, we have numerous different types. So if someone is HIV positive here, the doctor can put them on one type, and if it doesn't agree with them, they can put them on a different one and find one that does agree and doesn't make them be sick. Whereas in Malawi, we've only got one type, and it's quite a severe one, I think, and a lot of people feel really sick just from the antiretroviral drug. I know some people who've stopped taking the antiretroviral because it makes them too sick, and then they die of HIV, AIDS.
And what about the consequences of it rippling outwards?
Well, that's huge, because there's so many families where the parents have died and the children are left behind. The grandparents are there, and sometimes you've got grandparents who are looking after grandchildren and the middle generation's completely gone. I've got a very dear friend, an old lady who her husband died quite a while ago. She had seven children, six of them have died. And the last girl, lady, is always in and out of hospital and is really very sickly. And she has 11 grandchildren to look after. Now, she's in her 80s now. She's no longer able to work. She's getting frail. But she's got to find money and food to feed these grandchildren, and it's a constant source of worry as to how they're going to get food for the next meal. And that's just replicated time and time and time again in Malawi. There's lots of orphans.
In your school, how many of the pupils might be orphans?
I don't do a specific count, but I would say about 10%.
Just a fortnight ago in our church we had a concert with Maasai warriors from Kenya, and they were raising money for their projects back home. And they had built a primary school, and they were building on an orphanage onto the school, because they have so many orphans like this.
Yeah, I think in the community day schools, you'd find that the percentage of orphans would be maybe 40-50%.
As high as that?
Yeah.
And then you have children looking after children, because there aren't adults.
That's right, child-headed households. Quite a lot of those in the villages where all the generations have died, you can find child-headed households, where they've got maybe a child of 13, 14, acting as the adult and looking after his siblings and going out and selling tomatoes or something just to get
and food. Then these children taking adult responsibilities are not available for education.
Exactly.
They're off school now.
Mm-hmm. So it just continues to grow. The one success that Malawi has had, it's had a drop in maternal mortality, because the ladies who are pregnant, when they go to the hospital, they have to, or they're encouraged to take an HIV test, and if they are HIV positive, they can be given drugs so that during the time of birth, the virus doesn't jump from the mother to the child. So there's a drop in child infections, but also the virus can be controlled so that the mother doesn't fall ill as well. So there's been a drop in maternal mortality. So that's a success story.
Do you think, in general terms, we're winning or losing?
We're not over the hill yet. I thought it had peaked, but it hasn't quite. But we're generally winning.
Oh, well, on that optimistic note, let's move on to your next piece of music.
My next piece of music is, again, from Soweto Gospel Choir, and it's Kumbaya.
Which includes someone's praying, Lord. All these people in their need are praying for help.
That's right.
Helen, you're a teacher when you're out in Malawi. biology, isn't it?
Yep, that's right, biology and physics.
And you're the deputy head teacher as well.
I am.
So tell us a wee bit about education out in Malawi.
Education in Malawi is not the same as here. You don't have to go to school. It's not compulsory. There is enough school places at primary school for everybody, but there's not enough school places in secondary school for everybody. So you have an exam at the end of primary school, and those who pass are selected to secondary education. Those who don't pass then either finish or they repeat their primary education. There's enough places in primary education for everybody because the class sizes are huge. You've got 100 plus in a class.
Over 100?
There's no facilities. Teacher. Yeah, you just sit there and the teacher teaches by.
And you said they don't have to go to school. I can just hear Scottish people thinking, if
right.
I didn't have to go to school, I might not go. Mm-hmm. But are you saying that when they're given a free choice about going and not going, they all choose to go if they can?
No, they don't all choose to go. Some of them will be sent by their parents to go and herd the cattle, or they'll be looking after a child or what have you. So not all of them will be there.
But are the children wanting to go? It's
they
their parents who put them to the cattle.
Yeah, mostly the children want to go. But, you know, sometimes if the class sizes are too big, the children are not always learning things at school, because they're sitting right at the back or they're not getting attention and they can't pick up what they've learned or what they've been told. So sometimes children get tired. They don't know how they're not learning, and so
they
don't go.
Have they got classroom assistants to help the teacher?
No.
No.
In fact, sometimes you have one teacher for two classes.
Oh. That's 200 children.
That's 200 children. So give work to that lot and go and see the next one. So it means that in primary school, if a child is not very clever, they tend to fall behind and then they don't pass their primary school leaving exam. The other thing is the primary school leaving exam is in English, and if they're coming from a very rural school, they might not have even learned in English, so how can they understand the questions and write the answers in English? So that's also a big problem, a big hurdle for many children.
So is the education system working?
Well, it is, but if the teaching in primary school was better, more of them would get through to secondary education, and then they'd have to build a whole load more secondary schools because there's just not enough. There's only enough for 5% of the children to go to secondary school. And then there's three tiers of secondary education. There's what they call the national schools, which are very good schools. There's district schools, which are okay, and then there's community day schools, which there's a very large number of, but which have no facilities usually. So they've got no labs, they've got no library, they might not have any desks, and so children learn by theory, but they don't actually do things.
Is there any level of third level of education, colleges, universities?
There's a tertiary education, and we now have 5 universities in Malawi. The number of universities keeps increasing. One of them is the University of Malawi, and then 4 of them are private universities that have sprung up.
So the salmon are getting upstream.
They are.
In greater numbers.
Yeah.
And it's producing a greater valuing of education?
There's always been tremendous high value placed on education, but parents will make a huge effort to make sure their child is educated. And there's been a big increase in private schools, some of which charge very high fees, and amazingly enough, parents will do anything, sell a cow or whatever, just to get the money to send their children to school. They value education very highly, especially in northern Malawi. They value it very, very highly.
So some parents keep them back to see the cows, and others are valuing it very highly.
Well, no, even the ones who keep them back to see the cows value education. But, you know, when your livelihood depends on that cow producing milk or whatever, and somebody has to look after them, and the only people you've got are your children, then somebody has to go and look after. So it's a case of need.
Yeah. It's very fascinating. There's so much more we could discuss, but I'm conscious of our time. So could we do your next track?
Yeah, my next track again is from Ekwendeni School for the Visually Impaired Choir, and it's called Be Happy.
Well, Helen, it's been fascinating talking about several topics there. But in our last section now, can I just ask you a general question? You've been 30 years in Africa. You're now coming back to Scotland. Looking back over those 30 years, how has Africa affected you?
I think it's broadened my vision. It's broadened my vision. I understand how other people live. I've seen how other people live in different parts of the world. And it's made me more thankful for what I have here in Scotland. It's made me appreciate it more. But it's also made me more patient and more compassionate for those who'd have less, so that I want to spend more time in helping them. So even though I'm back here in Scotland, I still want to keep my connection with Africa going very much.
I think you'll be an honorary African now.
Yeah, well, I'm the Malawi ambassador.
They can take you out of Africa, but I don't think they'll take Africa out of you.
Not at all.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming and sharing your thoughts on all these important topics. And we do wish you well in your next phase of your life. Thanks for sharing with us and helping us to value our wealth and our democracy and our health and our education and indeed our faith. So can we just finish with the Soweto Gospel Choir giving us a well-known track from Africa. It's the South African National Anthem. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sons are called to come together.